Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Patrick Schonbeck, Assistant Director, Office of Science and Technology, and Chief Information Officer of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. A while back when Bradley Buckles appeared, the director of ATF, appeared on the Business of Government Hour, he made the following remark, and I'd like to quote him. The employee of the future is going to be the employee that has a laptop computer and brings with him the entire experience of the Bureau each time he shows up at a scene or to work. If ATF can put information and knowledge into the right hands through technology advancements, it's going to make a difference. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this remark.
Yeah, Paul, actually that's typical, I think, of some of the informed leadership that we have in place in ATF today. When I moved from the Secret Service several years ago, I saw an executive staff at ATF that was really serious about putting a priority on information technology and really making IT a cornerstone of their strategic direction for the future and not just talking about it. We've become the first agency to employ a seat management concept in outsourcing our desktop computing environment across the entire enterprise, and that really was in most part driven by a strong desire to move the organization from really an archaeology in the past to an architecture of the future. And we've had some tremendous success with that program and frankly become the envy of a lot of agencies in town. So I think Brad's remarks are typical of the view of our executives and the view they have towards technology.
Well, what role does technology play in helping ATF fulfill its mission?
Well, you know, today it affects literally every part of our organization. As I look around, we have systems that help us trace crime guns and issue licenses to firearms manufacturers, distributors, and dealers. We have systems that help us track the nearly $13 billion in revenue that I spoke about earlier in excise taxes from alcohol and tobacco products. We have systems that track the labels and formulas that we approve to put on those products. We have systems that analyze trends in explosive incidents, both domestically and internationally. We have systems that analyze our forensic science evidence and systems that help with criminal intelligence analysis as well. We have systems, everyday systems, that help our agents and inspectors manage their day-to-day case workload as well. The Internet, another good example. If you go to atf.trej.gov and look at today's webpage for ATF, you'll find any number of ways that we're using to try to get information out to people on how to deal effectively with our organization, where we're trying to take the organization, what we're all about. And all of these processes that I've just talked about really have evolved from processes that were assisted by technology to processes that are being performed with technology today. And that's how it's evolved. And that reliance on technology in those operations will only continue to grow in the future, in my opinion.
Technology is a rapidly changing field, and you came to ATF as the deputy CIO. How has technology changed your role?
The role has evolved actually much the way I described earlier that the CIO role in general has changed. The position was actually created in 1995 in ATF. And again, I think our leadership was a little bit ahead of the curve in recognizing the need for that strategic position. And was created as a full member of the executive staff. It sits at the table where the real decisions are being made. And that was in recognition of the emerging importance of technology, again, in the organization. And I have a continuing challenge of knowing not only how the technology works, but how it can be brought into the organization and used most effectively in our main missions. And that's the role that I enjoy the most, working for an organization that has a serious mission and knows that it needs technology to assist in getting there.
Treasury has 14 bureaus, of which ATF is one. How do the CIOs of these 14 bureaus coordinate their initiatives and investments?
Yeah, it's interesting that you'd ask that question. We have an active CIO council at Treasury made up of all the CIOs from the bureaus, and we meet faithfully once a month. Jim Flysick, our departmental CIO, chairs it, and I happen to co-chair the council. And the purpose is really to provide a forum for all of us to coordinate our activities and to find commonalities where we can between what we're trying to do in our organization. But the issue of governance, which I think gets at your question, is one that we've recently been trying to grapple with. In the interest of trying to move us from a place where we share war stories and learn lessons from each other to a stronger place of trying to move the entire department in a singular direction. And without some kind of governance model, that's hard to do. And we're frankly struggling with that now. And while it's true that we all have, in a way, unique missions among each of the bureaus, and if we didn't, we wouldn't exist, and that they sometimes present unique needs that sometimes demand unique solutions. I don't really buy the argument that we're so unique that we have to do our own thing within each of the bureaus. And that's what I'm trying to push for in the governance issue, that there are so many cases where that uniqueness is not present, where a general solution would fit everyone just fine, and we could consolidate our buying power and encourage the market in a particular direction just by the sheer strength of our market power. That's something I don't think we're taking advantage of today, and as one of the CIOs, I'm pushing us in that direction.
Mm-hmm. And the CIOs are by and large a very smart group of people. The arguments seem rather obvious. What prevents you from being successful?
I think it's a need to protect the turf in their own bureau and their own decision-making process. They certainly don't want to give up major decisions that their bureau head should be making or that their own executive staff should be making. But at the same time, I think if we formed directions that were consolidated and for common good, that those were directions that they can then endorse and support in their own decision process within their bureau. It's not a mandate as much as an encouragement in a direction that makes sense.
Well, you did mention much about the unique needs. How are the technology needs at ATF unique, and how do they differ from the other bureaus?
I think that's what my point is. Each of the bureaus is led by a dedicated executive team trying to do the right thing for their organization. What is unique is the value that each of them puts in technology and where technology fits in that organization. And that's really a decision only they can make. What is the priority of technology dollars versus manpower or other resources that they need to have? But I believe if we put a bit more focus on the common use technologies and where they apply and consolidate that buying power again, they can have their decision-making process and place the priority on the investment dollars that they have and still have a common view that we can all move toward.
Well, let me ask you about something you mentioned earlier. You talked about seat management. Could you tell us what that is?
Yeah, it's many people describe it as leasing a computer, a desktop environment, and it's not really a leasing program as much as it is a concept of how do you provide desktop computing resources to all the employees in your organization who need them. In this day and age, the knowledge workers in government, we're beyond the argument, does every employee need a computer? If you're a knowledge worker, it's a given that you need a computer and you need access to information. And seat management is a way to break away from the traditional approach of we have the whole organization to outfit, so we'll buy 25% of our needs this year and 25% next year, and by the end of year four, we'll have everyone outfitted. And what happens is you never really get to an endpoint where everyone has the same capabilities, and you're constantly dealing with the flow down of moving technology from higher-level workers to lower-level workers on its way out the door. And seat management for our organization was a chance to outfit virtually every employee in the bureau with a standard desktop environment and realize the advantages from day one of having that environment in place, where there's nothing unique about different parts of the organization. When we look at an IT solution that fits our environment, we know automatically it fits everywhere in our environment, and we don't have to make distinctions between the haves and have-nots in our organization.
ATF has been recognized for being one of the first, if not the first, to actually go and have a contract to provide seat management. Could you tell us how that came about?
Yeah, we are, to my knowledge, we are the first to do this on an enterprise-wide basis, and we basically competed the GSA schedules in accomplishing that. We pre-existed the GSA seat management contract that's since been awarded and is on the street now. But again, it was driven by a strong desire in our executives to renew our infrastructure, to put computers in the hands of our employees. And they didn't have an appetite for doing only part of it now and part of it later. And then the question of refreshing technology. You find the dollars today to do it, only to turn around several years later and have to find the dollars all over again. And rather than look at it as a capital-intensive investment, we're trying to build it into our budget base as a month-by-month, year-by-year, relatively flat investment that we realize we're just going to continue to ride into the future.
One of the big concerns about giving a large contract to a private enterprise to provide these services is just how well they'll deliver the services. How did you worry about that and ensure they would do a good job?
Well, there's no doubt that that's a risk. And I think, fortunately, in our case, the whole concept of seat management was still early in its stages. And our primary vendor, Unisys Corporation, realized that there were risks involved, but they entered into this with us really as a partnership, realizing that we didn't have all the answers. They didn't have all the answers. But we knew what our goal was. We knew what our requirements were. We had them nailed down very tightly. And as long as they worked with us to achieve those requirements, then the partnership was working. And I have to say from the very get-go that it's proven to be a very positive experience, holding them to the requirements that we specified right up front, but giving a little bit of grace on how we got there and what methods that they chose to do it, because after all, we want them to use their commercial practices to solve our problem and not try to duplicate what we were doing as a government agency.
Great. We've got to go to a break. We'll be back in just a minute with more of the Business of Government Hour.